Welcome to Portia Pattern with Bracken Helms, the show where we hear Bracken and his distinguished guests from the Portia community patter on about Porsches and all things automotive. Portia Pattern is sponsored by Circuit 64. Circuit 64 creates authentic automotive apparel made for like-minded automotive enthusiasts. The links for Circuit 64 are in the show notes. Okay, let's get to it.
Okay, here's another episode of Bill Patton blabbering. But he's got a lot of good stories, and one I think is really, really good. I still wish I wouldn't have done this in the library. I mean, who would have thought, oh, random room in the library, it's going to be quiet there. And then Bill keeps messing with the mic like he thinks it's a toy, pointing at him, hey, quit messing with your mic. I guess I could have him do it all over again, but he's getting old. I mean, he could pass away at any time. Not that he doesn't mind blabbering, but, you know, I don't want him wasting all his time redoing stuff we've already done. Also, I go on a tangent in this one about how people view 911s. I'm not really giving my opinion. I'm giving my opinion of what the Porsche world sees at certain times and how it changes. Like how certain cars are unfavorable, then they become favorable. Okay, anyway, let's get to Bill running his mouth about some stories.
Okay, so here's the craziest story I've ever heard. And you told me.
Oh, swell.
And you say it's true. And I've asked people about it, and everybody looks at me like I'm crazy.
Which one's
that? And I've told other people this story. People may think, oh, this guy's just spreading bullshit.
Well, you'll never know. Ask, what story is it?
Okay. So you told me how the restaurant, I don't even know if I'll pronounce it right, Fuquat?
Fuquat's.
How that got on the car.
All right. First of all, it's F-U. Q.
I don't know. I think it's F.
U.
I think it's F A Q.
No, I think it's F U Q U E T S. Google it while we're talking. It's a famous French restaurant in downtown Paris. And you're talking about the Jackie Gleason story?
Yeah, just get to getting.
Okay, so you've never been to Le Mans, but Le Mans, the pits are really weird. There's an open place. And the driveway where you drive down pit lane to go get your gas changed or your tires changed or what have you. So there's the driving lane and there's the stopping lane and the open thing. And it's just a concrete shell. It's like the size of a storage unit. You know, it's maybe 20 by 20. And at the back, there's a door. And the door empties out into a passageway that's narrower than this room. It's probably half of this room. I think it's made of concrete. A concrete wall on this side that goes all the way to the ceiling, and a concrete wall on this side that goes three quarters of the way up, and you can see over the top of it. And it's got a gravel floor. And that's where people go back and forth between the pits. If you're not part of the team, if you are part of the team, you go out in the front where the open things are and where the tire changing and all that pit work goes on. If you're not, like if you're press or spectators, you have to go through that tunnel with the gravel. So there's a guy out there, and he looks like Jackie Gleason, the comedian, but he's got a handlebar mustache. What makes it really comical is he has a midget with him, or a dwarf, or whatever you call it.
A little person.
And the little person is carrying a briefcase, and he's dragging it on the ground because he's so short, and it's really stupid looking because the other guy should be carrying the briefcase, right? And the little guy can't keep up with the big guy, and so he's walking really fast. He's dragging this briefcase, and he keeps going back and forth. And every time he goes by our door, he kind of pauses like he wants to do something. And all of us have noticed this because in order to go get food, you can't go through the front. You have to go through that back door and down the gravel thing to go get food. So people were constantly going out there. So I said, who in the hell is that guy out there that looks like Jackie Gleason? And so somebody said, he owns a restaurant and he's looking to sponsor a car. Well, why in the hell aren't we talking to him? And so I said, well, I'm going to go talk to him. So I went out And I try to start up a conversation with the guy and I can't get it going. So John Paul Belmondo, you can look this up, Google it later too. It's B-E-L-M-O-M-U-N-D-O, John Paul, J-E-A-N, not J-O-H-N, the French version. And he's a French actor and director.
Oh, yeah.
Famous.
Yeah, you told me this.
He was our interpreter.
Right.
And he's in there. And he's just a super fan. That's all he is. He doesn't know shit about cars. He doesn't own anything that he could turn a wrench on. He probably has a Porsche or a Jaguar or something, but he's just a race freak. And he's drawn to us because we have the great cars. We have Paul Newman. We have, you know, all these great drivers, blah, blah, blah. So he becomes our interpreter. So I go in and I grab him to come out to talk to this guy. And we get out of the guy that he owns this restaurant, Fouquet's. And it's a famous restaurant. And he wants to spend money to put his name on a car. So Barber's not there to have anybody talk to. And he was the money guy. He was the boss of the whole deal. So I decided that I would see how far I could get with this guy that wanted to buy this sponsorship. And I figured it was probably worth 10 grand to sponsor a car. So I said, well, how much do you want to spend? And Belmondo translates that into French. And the guy says a number. And I thought he was saying $500. No, I thought he was saying $5,000. And I thought, should I accept it or not? Should I go tell Barber that is he willing to put the guy's name on the car for $5,000? He didn't say $5,000. He said $50,000.
Yeah.
$50,000. So I know for a certainty that $50,000 is going to do it, right? I mean, this is just beyond belief. So I didn't even go to Barber. I just said, done deal. Now, I didn't even think about where they were going to put his name. That was completely went right over my head. I mean, this car is already filled with sponsorship shit. So Belmondo, he looks at me like I'm half nuts because I've just made a deal for Barber. And he wasn't even sure what the guy was meant, $50,000. And I said, when will you pay? And he said, now. And he said it in English. And they opened up the briefcase and there was $50,000 in the briefcase in cash. So I was wearing a racing suit and it had a zipper on the front. So they pushed all the money down the front of my racing suit and I zipped it up and I cinched the belt so none of it would come out the legs on the ground. And I went in and I waited for Barber to come in.
Why didn't you just take, you told me the same thing. Why didn't you just take the briefcase with you?
They didn't want to give up the briefcase for some reason. And I later found out what the reason was because the briefcase turned up again. And yeah. It wasn't a briefcase, it was a...
I think I know where this is going because I've heard the story. So keep, continue.
All right, so I go up to Barber. He's getting out of the car and he's pissed off because he can't quite figure out when to break on the Molson or something. And so I pull out this wad of money and I handed it to him. He said, what's this? And I said, well, my suit's filled with $50,000. Is there a place where we can put the name of a restaurant on the car? And he goes, are you fucking kidding me? So you've seen the car.
Yeah.
And it's got Fouquet's on the top of both doors.
Right.
Right over Newman's name. Right. And it's in white. And it shows up like killer. It's just...
Or is it yellow?
No, it's white.
Okay.
And it just shows up spectacularly. Well, this is where this little suitcase shows up again.
Right.
Because about 10 minutes later, the midget reappears.
Little person.
He reappears, and he's got paint in this briefcase thing. And a little ladder.
Right.
And he climbs up on the car. And this is 2 hours before the race. Maybe it's an hour before the race. The cars are on the grid. No, they're ready to go on the grid. And when they go out on the grid, the paint's wet. And we were all speculating on whether when the race started, it would cause the paint to run.
But then, like, so he climbs up there and freehands this on there.
Absolutely freehanded, yes. And it was in an old English style.
I've seen this stuff. But you guys didn't know at the time, and I don't know if this is true or not, but then night came in a glow in the dark. Or you could see it. Reflective or something.
No, it didn't glow in the dark. But you probably got that from the way I described it. Because at night, I went up on the top, on the roof of the pit,
right,
of the pit place. Because the photographer, and they had chairs up there and shit. Because the photography up there was fabulous. So I was taking pictures, and it was absolutely beyond belief to me that when that car came by, Fouquet's jumped off of it. And it was almost as though it was lit up or glow in the dark or something, because you could see it. It was just the way the light shined on it. It was like, it almost blinded you to the rest of the car because it was white on red. And it was just perfect. And that guy, every time they showed that car on TV, which was a lot because it was running first and second most of the race.
And it was Newman.
And that's all you see is Fouquet's. You couldn't see any of the other sponsors shit on there, but you could see Fouquet's. And it wasn't very big. It didn't even cover, I think it just barely covered Newman's name. So it was the guy got his money's worth, that's for sure.
The smashed car coffee table. So they made a coffee table out of a broken car?
You never
or a wrecked car?
You know what? You should, when you go home tonight, Google it and see if you can find it. All right, so Gerritsen rolls that car in 1978.
Right.
9 times end over end.
Right.
And they find parts of it in a tree a mile away. And he survives, and the only thing he's got is the bruises on his shoulders from the harness and all that kind of stuff. And so this car's rolled up in a ball. And so somebody said, what do you want to do with it? And he's in a foreign country with a wreck. What do you do? So somebody said, I think Gerritsen himself said, maybe you asked him about this. I think he said himself, I don't know, what's it cost me to put it in a junkyard? And somebody else said, hell no, take it home. It'll be a great souvenir. And then somebody else came up with the idea of putting it through a crusher. So they did. They put it through a crusher, and it ended up being that high off the ground and about that square. And then they put a glass top on it, glass tabletop on it. And it was a tabletop at Gerritsen Enterprises for years in the waiting room. It was absolutely killer. And then they had another tire or another table that was one of the wheels that they were able to recover because the wheels were all broken.
Okay.
But Google it. See if it's really possible that you might be able to see that in a photograph someplace, because obviously there's tons of photographs. I wonder where it is now. I wonder if Bob's has it. Because when Gerritsen went out of business, they didn't just send it to the trash barrel someplace. Somebody has it. Bob must have it in his home. If there was any recovery from that, Bob would have gone in Bob's pocket, not Bruce's.
So what cool cars have you owned?
First of all, the 911 and the 912 appeared on the scene in 1965. And the 911 clearly was the most desirable because it had the 6-cylinder motor. And nobody knew that it was going to become a cult car. It was just the next Porsche. And it was a body style change, which was interesting. But the 356 people hated those cars.
Yeah.
Because they
didn't. But I mean, that's just the way of Porsche. I mean, God.
Well, they hated them because it was such a departure from the friendly, rounded bug face that was on a 356.
But that's like a whole argument that's going to just get like I mean, they're all like that. The pre-impact people didn't like, and then like 89 and older don't think anything past there. And then they didn't like the 964. Now the 964 is popular again. Holy shit. What about the 996? That's the biggest piece of shit on the planet. Oh no, it's valuable. Now people like the 996. It's like, I could think of about a million cars that were like, Porsche people are crazy.
And who'd have ever thought that a 72 911 would be worth 80 grand or 120 grand? Who would have ever thought that? That's nuts. But it's true. Who would ever think that Singer would take a current car and make it look like an old car? Nuts. Totally crazy.
Well, they were doing the opposite. They were making it look more, they were taking old cars and making them look more modern.
And then they flipped. Then they went backward.
So what cool cars have you owned?
What
cool cars have you owned?
You know, I have a hard time with that because it depends on how it's asked. The one car that I would want back more than all the others is the black 57 Speedster. It was the coolest car I ever owned, beyond a doubt.
Did any, you had multiple 356s?
Yeah, I had two Speedsters, a black one and a white one. I had a 63 red coupe that was stolen and recovered 30 years later. I had a yellow 65 Cabriolet. I had a white 64 sunroof coupe.
So did any of the 356 have a 4-cam?
No. 4-cam motors were very rare, and in spite of their allure, they were impossible to keep tuned.
Right.
I mean, You'd go out, drive around for an hour, come back, and you'd have to tune it before you could go out again.
So what other cars? So your favorite, or the one you want back the most, is the 356 Black Speedster.
Now, other of my favorite cars were the 79 SC that I ordered special from the factory because it was paint to sample. That was one of my favorite cars. And it had gold BBS wheels. That was cool. Back then it was cool.
I know.
May not be so much now. And then my 75 Carrera was special. I didn't know it at the time, but my lilac purple 73T was special, but I didn't know that at the time. I only realized that later on, much later, 20 years later. My orange 914-6 was fabulous. A bunch of my 968s. I still love my 968s, man. I really did. And talk about a cheap car.
Okay, so what about you had a car stolen in 1971 that was found in 2010?
Yeah, well, let's see, was it 20? No, it was earlier than that. It was sometime in the early 2000s. Let me think about it a minute. It was stolen in approximately 71. What do you have in your notes?
71.
And it was found, I think, 40 years later. So what would that be?
2011.
2011?
Yeah.
Did I tell you the story?
So you're sitting in your house and
phone rings.
And yeah, so you walk out to your garage or something and like, no, I don't have a car missing. That was when it was retrieved.
Yeah. The cops, there's a cop on the phone. This is Sergeant Don Levy with the San Jose Police Department. We have your car. I said, what car? He says, your car that was stolen. And I'm on a cell phone, a big fat one, but nonetheless a cell phone.
A big cell phone in 2010?
Oh, okay, you're right. It wasn't a big one. But it was bigger than today.
No, I think they were actually smaller back then. Now they're getting bigger because people want screens.
Yeah, so was it a flip phone then or something?
Who knows?
Anyway, so
2010 was not that long ago. I moved to California in 2009.
Anyway, so I'm going stolen car. So I'm talking to the guy and going out to see if there's any missing cars because right. I think I owned six cars at the time. And I go out and I.
Why weren't you friends with me when I first moved here?
You?
Yeah.
It's not my fault. You didn't look me up.
It's your fault. Now I'm friends with the guy that has a motorhome. When I first got here, I could have been friends with the guy that had six Porsches. Now I get friends with the guy with a motorhome.
Anyway, so I go out and there's no cars missing. And I said, my cars are all here. And he says, did you own a 1963? And I went, holy shit. He's talking about the car that was stolen in 1971, and 40 years later they found it. Do you know the rest of the story where they found it?
It was, oh, it was at a place that you frequented. You were like,
I've been
like
there
the day before.
The guy was a client of mine. He was the 356 restoration business in San Jose on First Street. I can't remember his name right now. Anyway, he was a client of mine, and I had been in renewing his insurance the week before, and he walked me out to my car. And as we walked out into the car, out to my car, there were all these cars that were in for service and things for him to do. And he was restoring a car, and I saw it, and I went, I used to have a car like that. And that was it. We didn't talk much more about it. And he knew the story. He knew that I had a stolen car once. I don't know if he knew it was that one, though. So the cop says, do you want to see your car? And I said, of course I want to see it. Where is it? When he told me, I went, holy shit. I mean, how could the world be that small? So I went and looked at the car. And he was the guy that discovered it, because he was taking it apart and checking all the serial numbers. Anyway, I could have had the car for $2,500. But there were two problems with it. One is, I was going to be taking it from a guy who paid money for it. And so
he would have just been SOL?
Huh?
He would have,
well, I know, but...
Well, that's what I'm asking.
He would have been SOL.
Okay.
His money was down the tubes because he made the mistake of buying a stolen car.
Yeah.
He didn't know it.
Yeah, I remember this now.
Anyway, it was going to cost me $40,000 to restore it, and I was going to have a car I didn't want, because I didn't want a 1963 B coupe, and I didn't want to spend 3 years restoring it and pay $40,000. So I just said, I'll pass. So whoever had the car did whatever he did with it. Sometimes I think that was a mistake. I think I should have taken the car.
You should have asked him to stay in contact so you could have seen it when it was done.
That would have been a good idea.
He could have taken you to dinner or something. So how did it get stolen to begin with?
It was in the Montclair district of Oakland. This is almost impossible. I was living in a duplex. It was the first car I bought after my divorce. I bought it about a month after I moved out of my house. And I was watching the Raider game in my living room, and the wall that I was sitting against if you had broken through it, was the garage. Somebody opened my garage door, pushed the car out, because I had heard it start, and rolled it down the hill, and then found a way to get it started and drove it away while I was watching the Raider game. So I went out to go grocery shopping, or I think I went out to pick up my girlfriend, and the car was gone. And I thought, what the? Because sometimes I parked it on the street for convenience, and I'm looking up and down the street, and the car's not there, and it was gone. Boom.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, comment, like, and share with your friends. Feel free to send questions or suggestions to the email in the description of the show. Special thanks to our sponsor, Circuit 64. Goodbye for now. We hope we can get together again for our next episode. Now get out there and enjoy the cars and the people.